The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. at CNBC Global Headquarters. It's 10 a.m. here in London. I'm Frank Holland. Here is your 5 at 5. Adding to gains, stocks coming off their best week since November as futures point to a higher open. And earnings alert, investors gearing up for the busiest week of reporting season, headlined by some of the biggest names in tech. Regional reckoning, the first high-profile failure and fourth since last spring, as federal regulators take over a troubled Pennsylvania lender, Republic First. Plus, Elon Musk makes an unexpected visit to China and seals a very welcome win when it comes to some key Tesla tech. And later, trouble in the C-suite as Paramount looks for a CEO to be shown the exit. It's Monday, April the 29th, 2024. You're watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. All right, good morning. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange, coming to you live from CNBC London. Thank you so much for being here with us. We're going to kick off the hour with a check of U.S. stock futures with the NASDAQ and the S&P, both coming off their best week since November. Take a look. We are in the green across the board. It looks like the Dow would open just about 60 points higher, just a bit off of its highs of earlier this morning, but as you can see, in the green across the board. Huge moves in tech and communication services as well, with that sector coming up, with both sectors coming off their best day in more than a year. Big thanks in part to Alphabet's stock surge on the back of its earnings last week, new dividend, and $70 billion buyback. The company opening with a market cap above $2 trillion for the first time ever. I can see shares are just pulling it back just very slightly this morning. We're also checking the NASDAQ 100 pre-market gainers at this hour, taking a look at some of the stocks that are gaining in the pre-market. We are seeing, give us 1 second, we're going to pull those up. Tesla right there at the top of the list again after striking that deal in China, shares up just over 6.5%, followed by Apple, shares up over 1.5%, reporting earnings this week. AstraZeneca in third place at 1.5% even. So all this action ahead of this week's Fed decision and April jobs report. We're checking the bond market right now, taking a look at the benchmark 10-year right now, the yield coming in at 4.62, just pulling back a few basis points from the level that we saw last week. Important to note, the 2-year still very close to a 5% yield. We're also looking at energy, specifically the oil market. We're seeing that pull back a bit this morning, taking a look at the oil market. Brent crude seeing a bit of a deeper pullback than WTI. Brent crude, the international benchmark, down just about 0.6%. WTI, the U.S. benchmark, trading at about $83.60 a barrel, down 0.3%. Okay, that's your morning money setup. Let's now see how Europe is shaping up as this trading gets underway. Arabile Gumede has returned to Worldwide Exchange. A mostly positive day in Europe. We had a guest on one of the European shows say it's kind of a Goldilocks environment for Europe right now.
It certainly is, right? You have this higher interest rate environment, but still the anticipation that they're going to cut rates very soon. In fact, June is the anticipated date for that, pretty much locked in across the board when you speak to ECB council members then across the board. Then you're seeing markets also moving significantly higher. We have the CAC, we have the DAX, so that's the French and the German market having hit record territory recently. But now we're still watching that FTSE 100, right? 8,180, 0.5% higher than today. So significantly up then on the back of some positive numbers then as well coming out just last week. Of course, we do have that big deal in the mining sector. BHP still making further acquisition notes then as it looks to buy out Anglo American. So while it had been rebuffed, it is considering a new fresh order with regards to that. IBEX 35 out of Spain going down around 0.33%. Of course, very significantly, we did have some corporate news as well. Philips really speaking, really just around their company and having had that litigation issue, now agreeing to a $1.1 billion settlement then when it comes to their ventilator respiratory issues that have been at play. That's moved the share price significantly higher than 37% ultimately in the day's trading, Frank.
All right, Arabile, thank you very much. Now we're going to check on some of this morning's top corporate stories. Our Silvana Hanau is at CNBC headquarters with those. Silvana, good morning to you.
Hey, Frank, good Monday morning to you. All right, well, federal regulators have seized troubled Philadelphia lender Republic First Bank and sold it to regional rival Fulton Financial in what is now the fourth high-profile bank failure since last spring and the first of this year. Now, as part of the deal, Fulton Bank is assuming Republic First's $4 billion in deposits and $6 billion in assets. That's far smaller than the $229 billion in assets once held by Republic First at the time of its failure. In the first quarter of this year, Pennsylvania-based Fulton Bank had about $28 billion in assets and around 200 locations throughout Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, New Jersey, and Virginia. The deal doubles the size of Fulton's Philadelphia market while keeping its assets below $50 billion. Meanwhile, Tesla clearing two key regulatory hurdles when it comes to launching its self-driving tech in China. Reportedly sealing a deal with Chinese tech giant Baidu for mapping and navigation functions, while at the same time passing a key data privacy red tape requiring by Beijing. Now, the move comes after Tesla CEO Elon Musk made an unannounced visit to China over the weekend, where he met with the country's premier Li Qingyong, discussing everything from U.S.-China trade relations to the competitive EV landscape across China. And NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang opining on the future potential for artificial intelligence. Speaking with CBS's 60 Minutes, Huang says human jobs will not disappear because of AI, but it will open new doors.
We're hoping that it does things that surprise us. That's the whole point. In some areas like drug discovery, designing better materials that are lighter, stronger, we need artificial intelligence to help us explore the universe in places that we could have never done.
NVIDIA shares are down about 3% over the past month, but are still up 77% this year and 200% over the past 12 months, being
this
one of only four U.S. companies valued at more than $2 trillion, Frank. And right now we are seeing just about 0.5% up in the pre-market.
All right, Silvana, thank you very much. We'll see you just a bit later in the show. All right, turn our attention back to Wall Street. Another busy week on tap for investors with a triple threat of earnings, the Fed, and economic data. On the earnings front, it's the busiest week of the season with nearly one-third of the S&P 500 and 20% of the Dow reporting as we hit the halfway point of results. On the Fed front, Chairman Jay Powell and company largely expected to hold steady with its latest rate policy decision on Wednesday. As the central bank, it continues to grapple with high inflation, and we close out the week with the monthly jobs report, expected to show continued strength in the labor market after that massive surprise beat last month. For much more, let's bring in Vince LaRosso, CEO of Cloud Capital with $1.3 billion in assets under management. Vince, good morning. It's always good to see you. I'm just going to get right into this. What do you expect in this week? Last week, we saw a sell-off when the GDP data was softer than expected. We saw the markets finish higher after hotter than expected inflation. What's going on with the markets this week?
Yeah, hi, Frank. We think the backdrop for equity investing is really favorable right now. You know, it's largely a function of our view that disinflation is about to set in. You know, we're starting to see some of the CPI numbers. We think they're starting to roll down. If you look at some of the more current kind of data sets around CPI, which tends to be a lagging indicator, we actually think that the real-time reads on productivity and disinflation are favorable. We're really bullish on equities right here.
All right, so you're really bullish on equities. I want to bounce something off of you. UBS out with a note just yesterday, still forecasting two Fed cuts this year, 225 basis point cuts. I suppose that's important at this phase. Also forecasting that the 10-year is going to end the year at 3.85. They're overweight tech, and they also say there's opportunities in healthcare, industrials, and small caps. Agree with them that outlook that we are going to see cuts, even though it looks a little bit murky right now, and that we're going to see bond yields decline, which it sounds like fits into your thesis that there's a positive setup for equities.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, Frank. I mean, I think trying to be super precise about monetary policy is difficult. I mean, we step back and say, look, the equity market seems to be anticipating a more accommodative Fed. And if you look at the increase in interest rates over the last, you know, year or so, it has really not precluded equities from moving much higher. And we step back and see that disinflationary environment, whether it's demographics, which tends to be disinflationary, productivity gains from AI and technology. And if you look at balance sheets, consumer spending is going to get difficult to increase in this environment. If you look at the labor market, we actually think part-time jobs are taking over some full-time jobs. That tends to be disinflationary. So, you know, I think directionally, the Fed, we think, will be lowering rates. Precisely when and by how much is hard to predict, but we think that's a really favorable backdrop for equities.
All right, speaking of equities, we've got to talk about the Magnificent Seven. Last week, far performing the S&P, despite some of the volatility we saw that last week, Magnificent Seven up just about 5%. Does that solidify the case that mega cap tech, specifically those names, are the place that you want to be? Do you think that's going to quiet some of the thoughts that the market's broadening after that large concentration of positive earnings and positive results when it comes to these mega cap names?
Yeah, that's a good question, Frank. I mean, it might be a little bit of both, right? I mean, the mega cap tech names, which are a big area of exposure for the ETFs and the strategies that we manage at Cloud Capital, technology as a sector and some of the AI semi names are very large. We think it's because they generate significant amounts of cash flow. And these are enormous companies with really wide margins generating enormous cash flow. But we are seeing a broadening of the market. So being a security analyst, bottom-up research, going out of tech and finding interesting ideas in other sectors, whether they be small or mid or large cap, you know, we don't think that Mag 7 or what used to be FANG has a kind of a dominance on market strength right here. We're looking for security analysis and fundamental research to pay dividends.
All right, so you're saying it's a stock picker's market, it sounds like. Vince, always great to see you. Thank you very much. And for more on what's driving the markets and the train day ahead, head over to CNBC Pro at cnbc.com/pro for exclusive insights and analysis. All right, a lot more to come here in Worldwide Exchange, including the one word that investors have to know today. But first, we're going to see if tech can keep the rally going with Amazon and Apple set to report results this week. And we're going to tell you why our next guest says there may be valuation trouble brewing. Plus, Paramount CEO Bob Bakish may be shown the door as soon as today. CNBC media correspondent Alex Sherman, he's here with an exclusive report. And then later, much more on Elon Musk and his surprise trip to China. We have a live report from Beijing ahead. It is a very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns. Stay with us.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tasty Trade. Tasty Trade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tasty Trade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. And this is just a jam-packed week for earnings with 175 companies in the S&P 500 reporting their results. Investors may focus much of their attention on two massive companies that can make the market sink or swim in any quarter. Of course, we're talking about Apple and Amazon. For Amazon, analysts are zeroed in on its ability to become an even bigger media company as growth in the cloud business. It shows some signs of slowing down. For Apple, it's weaker demand in China and the company's position in the AI arms race. Their earnings follow results from their peers in the Magnificent Seven last week. Despite concerns over Meta's heavy spending on AI, the group packed on solid gains overall. Let's talk much more about this now with Allison Porter, portfolio manager of the Global Tech Leaders Fund at Janus Henderson. Good morning. It's good to see you. I want to jump right into this fund that you have here. Looking at the top holdings, more than a third or five of the Mag 7 names, NVIDIA, Google, or Alphabet, I should say, Amazon, Microsoft, and Meta. Are you sold? Are you sold after last week's performance, especially where the Mag 7 gained 5%, that this is where you want to be in the equity markets? Have you just shaken off any concerns about concentration risk?
Good morning. You know, first of all, I think, you know, the Magnificent Seven is a term created by media, but it is certainly not a monolith. And we believe that this is a stock picker's market here. You know, these companies differ very much, not just in terms of growth rate and valuation, but also in terms of capital intensity. That's really important. You know, you have NVIDIA that employs 22,000 people and Amazon that you mentioned that report this week that employ 1.5 million people. Capital intensity is very different, growth prospects, but they all do have very strong free cash flow profiles. But we're very stock selective in terms of the Magnificent Seven that we own and have in that top 10.
All right, so you're very stock selective. You mentioned valuation. So I did a little research. Tech right now trading at 26.5 times forward PE, consumer discretionary, where some of these Mag 7 big tech names are housed, at 24 times forward PE. The S&P at about 20 times forward PE. Is that too rich for what these companies provide? Supposedly higher productivity, of course, exposure to AI, and strong earnings in your mind?
Well, first of all, you have stronger than average balance sheets. You know, when you compare these to many of the large cap consumer staples names, you know, these companies are very early in their capital allocation journeys in starting to buy back stock. We've seen Meta in January and then Alphabet last week follow suit and just starting to introduce a dividend. So you have very strong balance sheets, no pension liabilities, and superior growth at these companies. And also, I would really note that, you know, over last quarter, and we expect to see that again this quarter, we'll see these companies really focus on margin opportunity. And we think that some of the restructuring efforts that were made last year can really start to bear fruit with better than previous operating margin leverage from these companies.
Okay. So I want to hit on the two earnings that are coming up later this week. Let's start with Apple. Obviously, some concerns about China weakness, but overall, what are your expectations?
Well, you know, we're long-term investors. Apple's a wonderful company. They've led in many of the past compute waves from with the Mac, with the mobile internet. And in this AI wave, they're never first, and they do tend to be lagging. So I think, you know, this quarter, generally, the focus, as you mentioned, is in China weakness. But we think investors will also be looking out beyond this quarter, and really thinking about when Apple is able to provide some compelling devices that can integrate AI and really position it well for this next AI wave, which up to now we've not seen so far. And I think that will really be out to June before we see that.
Okay. Also, Amazon reporting later this week. What are your expectations there, not only for its cloud business, but its ad business that's become increasingly important for all these mega cap tech names and, of course, its e-commerce business?
Yeah, so three big drivers, and Amazon has a great positive mix shift benefit because those higher margin businesses are growing faster. We've seen from both GCP, Alphabet and Azure, an acceleration in cloud services. So we'd expect to see some strength in cloud advertising businesses. Also, we saw Meta grow slightly faster than Alphabet. So we think that we should see some strong momentum in advertising. And also, we expect to see really strong operating margin leverage coming in the retail business. And that e-commerce business and operating margin leverage can also be helped by that leverage in the advertising business.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people saying they're watching very closely when it comes to margin and possible margin expansion for these Magnificent Seven names that are touting the benefit of their AI products, of investors expecting to see it in their own margins. Allison Porter, great to see you. Thanks for the time. We appreciate it. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, the latest CNBC Fed survey is out today, and it spells trouble for Jay Powell and his policymaking committee. Milken Institute chief economist Bill Lee, he's here to weigh in. Stay with us.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Deadly tornado outbreak that tore across the South and Midwest over the weekend. In Oklahoma, at least five people were killed, including a four-month-old, about 100 others injured. Red Cross Oklahoma said it was opening a shelter there to help assist residents, and the state's governor declared a disaster emergency. The war in Gaza continues to shake college campuses across America. In Los Angeles, pro-Palestinian protesters clashed with Israel supporters at the UCLA campus. Hundreds of student protesters were arrested nationwide over over the weekend. Police and faculties have been accused of a heavy-handed response to the demonstration so far. Just after midnight, the Timberwolves became the first team to move to the second round of the NBA playoffs. The team completed their sweep of Kevin Durant and the Phoenix Suns to win their first playoff series since 2004. It closes out a wild Sunday of postseason action after the Mavs erased a 31-point deficit versus the Clippers. James Harden erupted in the final minutes of the epic duel in Dallas to give LA the win. The series is now split at 2 games apiece. And Jalen Brunson made the Wells Fargo Center feel like MSG. The Knicks star's historic 47-point performance helped steal game 4 from the 76ers. New York is just 1 win away from bouncing Joel Embiid and company from the postseason. Frank, back to you.
You know, Richard, normally I'd smile on this toss back, but I'm a Sixers fan. I know the producers know this. I can't believe they made that the last story because I'm pretty tight about it. Richard Louie, it's good to see you, not those highlights. Yeah, there's no. It's good to see you, man, not the highlights. All right, thank you very much. Have a great day.
All right.
All right, we're watching shares of Paramount Global. The company set to report its earnings after the close today as it negotiates for a possible merger with Skydance Media. Those negotiations continue. Alex Sherman joins us now with more on that and his new reporting this morning. Alex, good morning to you. Sources are telling you of a possible C-suite shakeup that could happen as soon as today.
Yeah, today could be a landmark day in the history of Paramount Global. We should know this morning, I'm told, about Bob Bakish's fate likely exiting the company. And it comes just on the same day that Paramount Global reports its quarterly earnings. And Bob Bakish, the CEO, usually runs that earnings call. So he will not be on the call, I'm told. And it sort of throws the company into at least near-term disarray. Without a CEO, he's not going to be replaced by any sort of formal CEO for the long term, I'm told, because this company is in the middle of merger talks. And if they do complete a deal with Skydance Media, David Ellison would take over as CEO of that company. Our former CEO, NBC Universal's former CEO, Jeff Shell, would be president. If a deal doesn't get done, then the special committee is likely to turn its attention to a different deal. Apollo and Sony have had preliminary talks and likely could come together and make an offer even as soon as this week, one source told me. Right. So there's two different options.
So Alex, I want to touch on the
go-forward plan.
But yeah, I want to jump in.
Back to the
Okay, so according to reports from some other publications, the Apollo and Sony deal, that would call for some major structural changes and also possibly job losses, so important to note there. I want to go back to what you earlier said. David Ellison from Skydance possibly taken over as the CEO of a merged company, but this would be kind of an interesting structure. So 50% of the company would be owned by Skydance and its partners, and the other 50% would be publicly traded. So with this person possibly being the new CEO, what does this all mean for shareholders?
Well, the whole reason this is happening right now is that the Skydance media deal, and Paramount Global is in exclusive talks with Skydance, gets Sherry Redstone, who is the controlling shareholder, out of the company. Skydance would take over her controlling shares and then merge its assets with Paramount Global. But the common shareholder would simply just be along for the ride. So it would change nothing for a common shareholder of Paramount Global, other than the fact that it would be diluted by the billions of dollars of new equity that comes in. So that's bad news. If it went in a different direction where it was a full takeout of the whole company with Apollo and Sony, that could be much better news for a common shareholder because they could get a big premium on their shares. I will say one caveat, which is if you believe in the David Ellison Skydance plan, and we don't really know because they haven't been public about it, because they can't as that deal isn't done, then theoretically you could say, you know, there's more upside in that deal because as a publicly traded company, we get to capture.
All right, so a lot to consider there from those two competing deals. Important to note, Paramount Global shares up 4% on the news that CEO Bob Bakish is more than likely out ahead of its earnings report later today. So we hit on the shareholder impact. We hit on some of the deal structure. What about the streaming wars? What does this possible deal mean for the streaming wars? What does this mean about Paramount Global moving forward as a company in the media space?
So, look, again, near term, it's probably status quo at the company. You'd have to believe no major decisions will change. That means the existence of Paramount Plus stays as is, and they will report updated numbers today after the bell on the state of Paramount Plus. Longer term, it's possible that Sony and Apollo would have a grand plan. We don't know what that is, but they may have a different plan for Paramount Plus if it went in that direction. Skydance Media will also come forward and say, look, this is what our plan is. They probably, again, in the near term, would keep Paramount Plus as is, but maybe they would look to merge it with some other streaming service or try to take it in a different direction to give it a little bit more juice. That Paramount Plus has a lot of subscribers, 70 million plus subscribers. The problem is that it continues to lose money for the company. So that's the dilemma Paramount Global's in, and it's why the shares have struggled.
All right, a lot of moving parts here. Great reporting as always, Alex Sherman, your latest story up on CNBC.com. I know you'll be following the latest developments. Earnings call could be an interesting one. Alex Sherman, always great to see you. Kind of disappointed we don't see your piano in the background, though. I like when you do it with the piano back there. Coming up here, Worldwide Exchange. Apple takes one step closer to linking its ecosystem of devices. There goes that piano. With Microsoft-backed OpenAI, much more Worldwide Exchange coming up right after this. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I'm Frank Holland coming to you from CNBC London. Let's pick up the half an hour with a check of U.S. stock futures with the NASDAQ and the S&P both coming off their best week since November. Taking a look in the green across the board, the Dow off of its highs of earlier this morning, but looking like it would open just about 50 points higher. The S&P and the NASDAQ firmly in the green as well. This is Wall Street readies for what is the busiest week of this earnings season, with nearly one third of the S&P and 20% of the Dow reporting. That includes names like Apple, Amazon, 3M, McDonald's, and others. With U.S. stock futures in the green, a quick check of some of the biggest pre-market gainers in the S&P 500. Right there at the top of the list, you see Tesla shares up over 7% after it struck a deal in China that was very key for when it comes to data access. Right behind it, Paramount Global. We were just talking about it a short time ago. Their CEO reportedly out as it mulls different merger plans, shares up over 4%. Albemarle and Jack Henry rounding out the top four there. We also have the latest CNBC Fed survey out this morning. On the back of last week's GDP shocker and PCE print, forecasters are ratcheting up their outlook for second quarter growth and inflation. 29 respondents now boosting their second quarter real GDP outlook to 2.1%. That's up from 1.4%. The consensus inflation forecast now seen above 3% from an earlier 2.74%, with about half of respondents saying the recent inflation run-up is just a blip. The other half saying it's part of a longer-term stall. All this as investors await the kickoff to this week's Fed decision and Powell press conference on Wednesday. Joining me now with much more is William Lee, chief economist and executive director at the Milken Institute. Bill, it is always good to see you, especially ahead of a Fed meeting. I just want to get into this with you. Inflation higher than expected on Friday. The markets closed higher. GDP softer than expected earlier in the week. We saw a huge sell-off. What is Jay Powell and the other members of the Fed, what are they looking at?
Well, they're looking at the inflation numbers for sure, and they're seeing that the service sector inflation is hanging out at 4%, has been there since December, hasn't budged. A lot of that is housing, we understand, but also underlying the high service inflation is a shortage of skilled labor. And I think that's the supply side constraint that the Fed is talking about that may be alleviated. If it's not alleviated, they're going to keep interest rates tight to bring demand in line with supply. But the one thing that for sure the staff is going to be telling the Fed is that we're not going to be expecting so much spending power with all the job creation in the job market. The market is focused on the payroll survey that was released and will be released on Friday. And that's been averaging somewhere around 290,000, 300,000 jobs per month. But if you look at the other survey, the household survey, it asks people, are you working or not? Did you find a new job? And there, the job creation has only averaged 90,000 since January. So the spending power that is generated by the job market may not be as strong as in the past and may not be as inflationary as people are afraid of.
Okay. I want to stick with the job market for just a minute. You hit on some different data points, and we on the show have also looked at the downward revisions when it comes to the job numbers. That's also another important part of the story. We get the initial number, and then a lot of times we've seen some downward revisions. I went on something with you. Services, those are up 4% year over year. Goods, pretty much unchanged. Remember, all the way back during the pandemic, seems like a lifetime ago, Bill, but it was really goods inflation that led the Fed to hike rates. How do they view this services inflation and the fact that shelter inflation, surprisingly, we thought it was very sticky, it actually eased back a bit?
It has eased back, but the numbers hasn't shown up in the data yet. But the service sector represents 60% of consumer spending. So it's a very big chunk of the underlying inflationary pressures. And the Fed has got to be sure that that is coming down in a decided fashion that we can get to 2%. But when service sector, 60% of spending is rising at a 4% pace and has been doing so since December, that's not enough to give the Fed confidence that we're on our way to 2%.
All right. So I want to put you in the forecaster seat, Bill. This is one of the toughest jobs anybody has when they come here on CNBC. How do you see the Fed playing out for the rest of the year? Do we get rate cuts before the election? How many cuts do we get this year?
It's very unlikely we're going to see a rate cut until we see that service sector inflation come down. And they're going to have to see two or three data points of it coming down before they're convinced that things are going their way. So for me, we're talking September, possibly November meeting right after the election. And more likely, those last two meetings will be the type of areas where we see the rate cut. And I'm doubting we're going to see more than 2 quarter-point cuts.
All right, Bill Lee, we got to leave the conversation there. Great to see you as always. Always appreciate your time. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, Elon on the ground in China. We're live in Beijing with what Elon Musk hopes to achieve with his surprise visit as Tesla faces growing competition in that country. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up right after this. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Taking a look at Tesla shares, they're moving higher in the pre-market, up just about 7.5%, as its CEO Elon Musk makes an unannounced visit to China over the weekend, meeting with the country's premier and reportedly making key inroads in his mission to get Tesla's full soft self-driving technology onto Chinese roads. Our Eunice Yoon joins me now, fresh off her coverage of the Beijing Auto Show, where Tesla was absent, but rivals like BYD, Li Auto, NIO, XPeng, and even Xiaomi, they took center stage. Eunice, good morning.
Hey, Frank. Well, it looks like a productive trip for Musk. After arriving here in Beijing on Sunday, he met with Chinese leaders, and then Tesla soon after issued a notice really boasting that Beijing deemed it compliant with new China's data security rules. This involves a collection as well as storage for data. Tesla is the only foreign invested firm listed as compliant. The notice also said that local governments that had restricted where Tesla cars were allowed to go are lifting those restrictions. Now, Tesla's China VP had posted on her social media that the discussion between Elon Musk and the premier had pertained to the importance of AI and autonomous driving as key to the future of EVs. Now, numerous reports are also saying that Tesla is very close or has a tentative nod from Beijing for its full self-driving or FSD software for China, and that the Chinese tech giant Baidu would provide the mapping data. Now, Baidu and Tesla are not commenting on this. Reuters is also reporting that Musk has been aiming for Beijing approval to allow that data to be transferred overseas to help with the algorithm for autonomous driving back home. And in this way, Frank, we would see Tesla really capitalizing on Beijing's push to promote EVs as well as autonomous technologies to strengthen his own technology back home as well as overseas globally.
So, Eunice, I'm seeing reports that Tesla was part of the first batch of automakers that met that data compliance standard. Are any of the companies that are pressuring Tesla on price or for market share, do they also meet the requirement?
There have been others, such as its competitors like BYD, that had also met compliance, but again, no other foreign company. What I think is also interesting is what this means for Beijing, because it just looks as though they are seeing that Tesla is a leader in areas that they also want to be leaders in, say autonomous driving, as well as EVs, AI. And in that way, we saw that he met with, for example, the chief of CATL, which is the big battery maker here. He also met with the Chinese trade agency chief, who was praising him for his supply chain, of course, here in China. So all of that really suggests that they see him as very important for their own move to try to promote their own technology worldwide.
All right, Eunice Yoon, live in Beijing. Eunice, always great to see you. All right, coming up here in Worldwide Exchange, shares of Apple on the move as the tech giant gets some love ahead of his results this week. With your morning call sheet coming up next. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up right after this break. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange Market Flash for you. We're watching shares of Norfolk Southern and Cleveland Cliffs this morning. Cleveland, which is a major customer of Norfolk, is backing activist investor Ancora Holdings in its effort to have seven directors and a new CEO installed at the railway. The CEO of Cleveland Cliffs saying the outcome of the proxy fight will have no impact on its customer or supplier relationship with Norfolk. Taking a look at shares of Norfolk Southern, just fraction low right now, basically flat. Similar story for Cleveland Cliffs. All right, time now for your morning call sheet. We begin with Bernstein upgrading its rating on Apple ahead of the tech giant's results this week, moving it to an outperform. Bernstein says replacement cycle tailwinds and incremental generative AI features set up Apple very well for a strong iPhone 16 cycle, already the 16. Shares of Apple up right now 1.75%. No love for Southwest Airlines from Jefferies, cutting its rating on the company to underperform. It cites estimates that are significantly below prior forecasts and changes around its development markets. Shares of Southwest right now down more than 2.5%. And Barclays upgrading AT&T's rating to overweight. Barclays citing what it calls a mismatch between valuation and improvements in growth quality and execution for that move. Shares of AT&T up 1.5%. All right, time now for your global briefing. Whipsaw moves for the Japanese yen, jumping to 155 per U.S. dollar after sliding to 34-year lows. Traders say that this signals a likely intervention by the Bank of Japan to stop that currency's decline. The yen has lost more than a third of its value since 2021, even after the BOJ exited negative interest rates last month. The owner of L'Occitane is reportedly preparing to make a proposal to take that company private as early as today. Bloomberg says the deal could value the French skincare maker at around $7 billion, and that includes debt. And Blackstone is buying Hypnosis Songs Fund for more than $1.5 billion, outbidding an offer from Concord. The offer for Hypnosis, which owns the music rights of artists like Shakira and the Red Hot Chili Peppers, adds more than 65,000 songs to Blackstone's portfolio. It previously invested in performance rights organization CSAC, whose portfolio includes Bob Dylan and Adele. All right, coming up here in Worldwide Exchange, we have the one word that every investor needs to know today, plus where our next guest is not wavering from her bullish view on the markets in this critical week ahead for stocks. We'll be right back after this break. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It's time now for your WEX wrap-up. We start with federal regulators seizing troubled Philadelphia lender Republic First Bank and selling it to regional rival Fulton Financial in what is now the fourth high-profile bank failure since last spring and the first of 2024. As part of that deal, Fulton Bank is assuming Republic First $4 billion in deposits and $6 billion in assets. NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang making the case for future potential for artificial intelligence. Speaking with 60 Minutes, Huang says human jobs will not disappear because of artificial intelligence.
We're hoping that it does things that surprise us. That's the whole point. In some areas like drug discovery, designing better materials that are lighter, stronger, we need artificial intelligence to help us explore the universe in places that we could have never done.
Sources tell CNBC Paramount Global's board is preparing to fire CEO Bob Bakish as soon as today as part of its merger talks with Skydance Media. Paramount Global reports its earnings today, and Bakish is not expected to join that call. BHP is reportedly considering making an improved proposal for Anglo American after its initial $39 billion proposal was rejected. Reuters says the size and the structure of that deal has not yet been decided. Elliott Management has reportedly invested several tens of billions of yen in Buffett-backed Japanese trading house Sumitomo. According to Bloomberg, Elliott has spoken to Sumitomo about ways to create shareholder value. And Apple is reportedly renewing discussions with OpenAI about how to use the startup's tools to power new features for the iPhone after talks subsided in recent months. And Nike will reportedly change several parts of the new MLB uniforms by the start of the 2025 season following months of complaints. In a memo to players, the MLB says the uniforms are a Nike issue with the company innovating something that didn't need to be innovated. Interesting statement there. All right, here's what to watch this week. It's the busiest week of the earnings season with nearly a third of the S&P 500 and 20% of the Dow reporting. That includes Apple, Amazon, Eli Lilly, and many others. We're also keeping an eye on the Fed and the economy ahead of the latest monetary policy meeting tomorrow and Wednesday. We'll also get several key pieces of economic data, including the April jobs report on Friday. So earnings and the Fed taking center stage once again as the markets eye another positive session. Bob Pisani has the key takeaway from earnings season so far.
We are at the halfway point for first quarter earnings. The good news, earnings are coming in well above expectations and full year estimates are holding up as well. The bad news is future earnings could be threatened by slower economic growth and sticky inflation. Despite the concern of higher for longer interest rates, first quarter earnings are running 5.6% above the same period a year ago, and companies are beating their estimates by an unusually large percentage, nearly 10%. That's a lot. More importantly, for the rest of the year, analysts continue to project growth in all three remaining quarters for the year due to the still strong jobs market and a resilient consumer. The S&P 500 is only 3% from its historic high in March, and even that modest drop is due entirely to investors taking down the multiple, also known as the PE ratio. So the multiple is how much investors are willing to pay for a future stream of earnings and dividends. When interest rates rise, as we have been seeing, it makes that future stream of earnings less attractive. So investors are willing to pay less, even if the earnings don't change. So earnings have been stable because the U.S. consumer is still spending and jobs remain plentiful. Look at some of the comments. Visa CFO Christopher Hsu said, consumer spend across all segments from low to high has remained relatively stable. Our data does not indicate any meaningful behavior change across the consumer segments. And American Express seemed to agree. The CEO there, Stephen Squeri, agreed. He said, I think consumer spending is relatively strong. So look, as long as that holds up, that consumer holds up, earnings should hold up as well. Back to you, Frank.
All right, thanks to our Bob Pisani. Joining me now is Victoria Green, founding partner and chief investment officer of G Squared Private Wealth. She's also a CNBC contributor. Good morning, Vicky. Let's get this thing started. What's your WEX word of the day? How do you see this day shaping up, this first trading day of the week?
Well, I had to do a derby word because it's the 150th run for the roses on Saturday. So my word of the day is mutter. A mutter is a horse that excels in tough conditions, rainy track, sloppy track. And I think right now investors really want to look for some really good mutters in their portfolio, resilient, quality, cash flow, balance sheet, everything that if we hit a rough patch, you've got a mutter that's going to be able to see your way through.
All right, so you're all about the mutters right now. So, you're, again, it sounds like you're saying something we had an earlier guest say. It's kind of a stock picker's market right now. I want to go to your pick right away because it's one of the big earnings reports this week. It's Amazon. You're bullish on Amazon, but it's actually related to something that Bob Pisani just referenced, Visa and American Express earnings. Visa reporting 16% higher transactions, American Express card members spending up by 7%. Why do you think that's such a big read when it comes to Amazon when we're seeing so much spending shift from goods to services?
Well, they're still selling a lot of goods. Their retail sales should be very strong in Q1. They also had their spring sale for the first time. So we're bullish that these sales numbers are going to come in. We know the consumer spent a lot of money in Q1, and I think Amazon picked up a lot of that spend. I am a little bit watching out if Temu and Shein and some of the other low-cost retailers from China might eat market share, but I think Amazon's going to blow it out of the water. I think AWS is going to accelerate. I see ads as a huge pickup for them. They're adding that on Amazon Prime. They've got like 230 million Prime members. And if they have everybody there say, no, I'm not willing to spend $2.99 a month on ads, that's a huge pickup for them. That ad business between that targeted ads on the retail side, that could be $100 billion pickup for them. So I think everybody spent money in Q1. I think a lot of people spent a lot of money on Amazon.
I spent a lot of money on Amazon. I'm about to say myself included, Vicky. I want to get to the ads thing. That's been actually a big theme for mega cap tech earnings. It feels like it's almost underreported, but we've been hitting it here on Worldwide Exchange. The estimate for Amazon's digital ad business, $11.73 billion. That would be a 23% increase year over year. After what we saw from Meta, are you concerned at all about Amazon's ability to grow ads at that level?
I think they can grow it. It's still very new. And so I think they're kind of baby stepping their way in. If you look at the ad placement that they're doing behind on the retail side, as well as the rollout on Prime, but Meta didn't have something like Prime necessarily to roll it out on. This is a whole new platform, a whole new way of exposing ads to their Prime membership base. Let's say, okay, 70% of their Prime members actually watch Prime TV. If you have 125 million people watching ads, that's potentially a huge pickup. Plus they're pushing into the NFL, live sports streaming, and we're seeing more and more linear TV come over here to the streamers. It's a huge pickup beyond the behemoth of the retail side.
All right, Vicky, we got to get out of here, but I need one quick answer from you. What are you expecting on Wednesday, a hawkish J-Powell or a dovish J-Powell?
I think it's going to be a little hawkish. They keep walking back expectations. They want to keep options on the table. More and more, they want to make sure the market isn't front-running cuts. So I think Powell's going to be data-dependent and do judicious, but I could see it tilting a little hawkish.
All right, Victoria Green, always great to see you. That's going to do it for Worldwide Exchange. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun this season. Kings Island is now open weekends.